I say your civilization, because as soon as we started thinking for you, it really became our civilization, which is, of course, what this is all about. Evolution, Morpheus. Evolution. Like the dinosaur. Look out that window. You had your time. The future is our world, Morpheus. The future is our time. I'd like to share a revelation that I've had during my time here. It came to me when I tried to classify your species. I realized that you're not actually mammals. Every mammal on this planet instinctively develops a natural equilibrium with the surrounding environment, but you humans do not. You move to an area and you multiply, and multiply until every natural resource is consumed. And the only way you can survive is to spread to another area. There is another organism on this planet that follows the same pattern. Do you know what it is? A virus. Human beings are a disease, a cancer of this planet. You are a plague, and we are the cure.
Well, that was a little excerpt from The Matrix, which many of you might be familiar with. I want to welcome you to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling on KKRN 88.5 FM. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Unspun tries to unravel the hype and illusions of corporate media through in-depth interviews with truth-tellers and advocates from around the world. We are now streaming live on the internet. Go to kkrn.org and click on the Listen button. KKRN is a community radio station supported by listeners and underwriters like yourselves. Once again, go to kkrn.org and click on the donate button to support our efforts. Originally, I had planned to have Mara Alvera, who's a respected local activist, artist, and a producer of Small World Radio, on with me today as a co-host, but he is busy doing what he does best, which is helping organize direct action, and this time involving the Mount Shasta water spread, the headwaters of the Sacramento River. So he's there today, and they're going to be there today educating the public about water usage shortage in California and some of the misuse of water in our state. I want to remind listeners, Unspun is a call-in show. We invite questions and comments from our listeners. Phone number here in the studio is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. Today, we're very lucky and blessed and honored to have Paul R. Ehrlich. He is a Bing Professor of Population Studies and the President of the Center for Conservation Biology at Stanford University. He is the author of more than 40 books, including The Population Bomb and Human Natures, Genes, Cultures, and the Human Prospect. Paul's latest book from Johns Hopkins University Press is The Annihilation of Nature, Human Extinction of Birds and Mammals. In The Annihilation of Nature, he and co-authors Gerardo Ceballos and Ann H. Ehrlich, his wife, serve as witnesses in this trial of human neglect, where the charge is the massive and escalating assault on living things. Nature is being annihilated not only because of the human population explosion, but also as a result of massive commercial endeavors and public apathy. Paul Ehrlich is a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science and the United States National Academy of Science, the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, the American Philosophical Society, and I believe he's also a fellow of the Royal Society in England. He has warned of the consequences of overpopulation and of environmental abuses for over 40 years. Let's welcome Paul Ehrlich. Paul, welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling.
Very nice to be here.
Or
yeah. Oh, wait.
You're ubiquitous. You're everywhere.
We're not down here, though. Are you burning up there at the moment?
No, we're kind of calmed down a little bit. But, yeah, we have fires going all over the state. And I'm sure you're aware of the drought situation in California, which really talks to so many of the things that you've been warning about for years.
It's interesting that the last big drought in the late 70s, I think it was bad. But at that time, we only had about 60% of the people we have today, so in California. And, of course, every person adds to climate disruption, which is one of the things causing the drought. And, of course, you got to supply water then to a lot more people and a lot more activities. So even though the drought may not be much worse than the last one, its impacts and its connection to population is very clear.
Yeah, and relative also to that is globalization. We have a great number of large agricultural, commercial people using the water. 80% of California's water is going to agriculture. And though our governor was willing to put some sort of limits on people, he wasn't willing to limit business that much. So I think they went to some sort of self-policing plan, which we know the result of that from our own history. So we're in dire straits here, but it has really brought home the overpopulation of the world, actually.
The whole climate disruption issue is also a major factor in causing the annihilation of nature. I mean, you know what's happening to fish in various of our streams and so on, but around the world, one of the big issues is how much can various other organisms, which are parts of our life support system, either move or evolve rapidly enough to deal with the rapid climate change. I have to also say, by the way, that Jerry Brown isn't perfect, but boy, if you've listened to, say, a Republican debate, you know his IQ is higher than the sum of all the people talking in those debates. He's doing a really good job. And he's really aware of these problems, and we're very lucky to have him.
I try not to endorse anybody on community radio, but I would have to agree with your the equation there on their IQ. You're probably right. And worse than that, what is their motivation? Who are they really serving? Most of the politicians in both the parties, as far as I can tell, are pretty much serving the same interests they always have, which may be the interests that we're going to have to overcome to actually get something done.
But we do have the best politicians money can buy, so.
They're endorsed by some of the biggest oligarchs. We know that. Let's talk about, for the listeners, let's go back to the sixth great extinction. And many of them really aren't aware. You don't hear this in the mainstream media. You might get little clues and hints of it. But would you tell our listeners what's going on in the biosphere right now, why we need to be really involved in maybe mitigating or preventing some more of the species loss?
Sure. Our history of life on this planet has not been a continuous one, in a sense. That is, there always has been new species being formed by evolution as the planet is always changing. Conditions are changing, and that leads to natural selection and new species being formed, and it leads also, of course, to species and populations and species going extinct. But there have been previously five gigantic episodes in which extinction overwhelmed speciation, and we lost a large portion of the living things on the planet. And the last one, it's about 66 million years ago when an extraterrestrial object hit somewhere very close to Yucatan and wiped out, among other things, all of the dinosaurs except for the birds. Birds are really just surviving dinosaurs. And one of the big issues is humanity now starting the sixth mass extinction? And the most recent research, some of which I've been involved in, shows very clearly that extinction rates now are somewhere between 100 and several hundred times higher than they were in the times between the mass extinctions at the standard background rates. So there's no question that humanity is starting another mass extinction. And one of the obvious questions is, why should we give a damn? You know, so we lose a lot of organs. Nobody misses the dinosaurs, right? I do sometimes because there are too many people around. But anyway, and the reason is, of course, that these organisms, the other plants and the other animals and the plants of the planet, are our life support system. We lose them, we're going to lose ourselves. Of course, there's also aesthetic values in them. There are many people who feel, I think, rightly, that we have a moral command to not destroy the only other living things we know about in the universe. But much more importantly, from a direct viewpoint, those other organisms are responsible for supplying, for making the weather livable, or allowing us to have massive agriculture, for example. If it weren't for the natural pests of the things that attack our crops, we couldn't possibly feed, even start to feed, today's population. As you probably know, we're not feeding really decently, about a third of it. Our climate, our food, our diseases, and so on, are all controlled by natural systems that we're busily destroying. That's really dangerous because, as we know from the past mass extinctions, restoring the diversity of life requires millions of years. So from the point of view of an explosive species with over 7 billion individuals trying to survive as an industrial civilization today, what we're doing is cutting off the branch that we're sitting on. To give you a single example, suppose we lost the honeybees in North America. We'd lose no species. It would be a series of population extinctions. But if we lost them, we would have a very much less nutritious food output from the continent, and it would cost about $16 billion. And that's just one set of populations of one species. And there are lots and lots of examples, and we know very well that the systems that we depend upon are under attack.
Well, I noticed Jared Diamond had done a review of your latest book, Annihilation of Annihilation of Nature, The Human Extinction of Birds and Mammals. And I had him on the show, I think it was last year, maybe the year before, and I put point blank to him the question, how much longer do you think the American the Western culture, if you want to call it that, how much more time do you give them before you believe there'll be a systemic collapse? And he said 10 years, which just kind of blew my socks off. He wasn't even talking about the effects of climate change. So I guess my question to you, looking at all the extinction rates and our place in that chain of life, what do you think? I mean, if we keep going, business as usual, as they say, we keep going as we are, what do you think the chances are that our demise will be very soon?
Well, this is actually a source of debate among Jared, who's an old friend, and say Jim Brown and myself. Ann and I said we thought we had about a 10% chance of civilization not collapsing in this century. And Jim said, you're crazy, it's only about 1%. And we said, well, we think it's worth working to make it better, to make it a 11% chance of survival. And he said, yeah, he thought it was worth working to make it a 1.1% chance of survival. The real answer is we don't know, because we have what's technically known as a complex adaptive system. That is, two of them actually interacting. And you have lots of individuals seeking their own best situation. And when you have this sort of thing, you get what are called emergent properties, which are unpredictable. Let me give you an easy example. Anybody who has commuted or driven a lot on our jammed highways will occasionally run into something that suddenly slows the traffic, maybe to a total stop, but slows it for quite a stretch. And then it'll start speeding up again. And when you start speeding up, you look and there's no wreck, there's no naked woman standing on the roadside, there's no reason for the slowdown, but it's just one of the emergent properties of a massive commute with everybody driving with their own goals independently. And that's what's scary. In other words, if we go on the current course, then it's crystal clear we're not going to have a civilization like the one we have today at the end of the century. Remember, we're going to be trying to add to the population between now and the middle of the century 2.5 billion people. That's 500 million people than were on the planet when I was born in 1932. Already, we can't feed about a third of the population. In other words, we could if we distributed the food equally, but we don't. And so we have something like 800 million people starving and a couple of billion micronutrient malnourished. Most recent estimate was that we have lost in the last few decades half of the wildlife on the planet. By the way, that which supplies food to a lot of people. One of the things that people don't understand is that, for example, little fisheries on coral reefs are absolutely critical for the protein supplies of millions of people, and yet we're losing those fisheries. So you can't say it's all going to end in 3 days or 300 days or 3,000 days. What you can say for sure is it's going to end. You cannot grow forever on a finite planet. We unfortunately have a faith-based economic system. In other words, the economists have no idea what the physical constraints on growth are. They simply believe that you can grow forever and that somehow innovation will save them at every turn. Unhappily, you know, for instance, we're not getting the innovations. We are still burning massive amounts of fossil fuel when every scientist knows that's lethal. We're already allowing populations to go extinct at a horrendous rate, even though science has said many times that civilization can't survive that, although at what exact point it'll collapse, nobody knows. So I'm very optimistic about what we could do, but I'm very pessimistic about what we're going to do. All you have to do is listen to the Republican debates. Not a single important issue has been raised in either of the debates so far.
Yeah, we have a caller. In fact, I believe it's Morrow, the gentleman that I was going to have to co-host the program. So I'm going to take his call. I'm sure he has some really great questions for you and some thoughts. So, Morrow, you're on the air. Oop, I think he is. 1 second. I have control. I have electronic control of the universe from where I sit here.
Oh, as you know, technology never fails. It'll always stay.
Morrow, you're on the air.
Okay, you can hear me okay now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, really great that you're having this show. I've, since last couple years, have turned my attention from my other activism to the sixth great extinction because I feel this is the fundamental unit of thinking now for humanity. It needs to be in play when we think about things like creating plastic, which now, you know, they're showing that plankton is eating plastic, which in itself could be an end-of-life event because it's at the bottom of the food chain, and there's no way it's not getting up to humans now where I think they're going to start telling us that they're finding plastic in us. And your guest mentioned that 50% of life has disappeared in the last 4 or 5 decades on the planet, and especially in the oceans. We're seeing our oceans die so rapidly. And my question would be, considering the kind of problem, like how plastic is now disintegrated and is entering life at all points, do you believe that we are going to see a way out of this, or are we going to witness the greatest catastrophe that has happened before we see the way out of this?
Well, it's interesting that you raised that issue because we just had a seminar last Tuesday, from Professor Pete Myers, who is the expert on toxics, really. He's the person who showed that our entire toxicological approach was wrong. You know, when we're in high school, we're told that the dose makes the poison, that if you ate a pound of table salt, you'd die, which is perfectly true. But it turns out that much of the stuff we're manufacturing now is more dangerous in tiny quantities because of the way it affects your cells. And Pete discussed, and several of us have elsewhere, the whole plastic problem, which is truly horrendous. I love raw oysters, but I can hardly bring myself to eat one because the recent studies show they're loaded with these tiny little particles of plastic, which we don't know what their effect is on our bodies, and they are certainly going into human bodies now in increasing quantities, but they also collect, adhere to their surface, the so-called persistent organic pollutants, like the products that DDT disintegrates into, PCBs, things like that. So it's basically a carriageway to bring poison to all living things. And we are producing the plastics ad lib. Worse yet, as you know, in the oceans, the action of the water and the grinding around produces these microparticles, but now they're made commercially, you know, and they go into things like toothpaste as an abrasive and into lots of other products, skin care products and so on. So we're actually purposely manufacturing something that could possibly lead to an end of civilization. We don't know what the long-term effects of loading the bodies of other organisms and of ourselves are with these microparticles of plastic. Few people are paying attention to it. Certainly the government isn't paying attention to it at the moment.
Well,
I wish I could be cheery, but my solution for Californians to all this problem of the environmental deterioration is very simple. That is, drink a lot of our great wines, and your internal environment will stay in reasonably good shape while the external goes down the drain.
Mauro, did you have something to add?
Yep, I see that the microbeating is being attacked by many states, and it looks like there's going to be a successful squashing of that industry. But it'll
True,
be.
True, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of it going on. Several states have already enacted legislation to stop it. But unfortunately, like you say, the oceans are doing a damn good job of it.
We keep dumping plastics into the ocean, we're going to have more microbeads. Unless you can somehow calm the ocean down so it doesn't stir things around, which seems unlikely.
People don't realize that all the stuff, the pesticides you mentioned, the DDT, none of that stuff ever goes away. It just changes form or gets smaller. And humanity is going to have to really start enacting laws like a straight across the line, plastic is a crime. And
I couldn't agree more. You know, in the 70s, we had a saying that there is no a way to throw anything to. And I think it's an important rule. And I think, again, my view and published view with colleagues is that the only basic solution to this overall problem is to reduce the scale of the human enterprise. We are too large relative to the life support systems we're depending on. And the more we damage them, the smaller our chances become.
And the window of being able to use our technology to allow us to have a larger population, like Buckminster Fuller envisioned, he always said, we don't have a population problem, we have a resource problem. But since we don't use our technology that way, we're missing the opportunity to have such splendid diversity of humanity. And now we're
running out of resources. There's a very good book by Mike Clare called The Race After What's Left. And when you look at the really critical issues like the EROI, which people have never heard of, but which is a critical thing, it's the energy return on investment. It's how much energy you have to use to get the energy you need to run your civilization. And I'm making the numbers up because they're very complex. But basically, when we were getting oil in Texas with gushers, we had to invest about, you know, one barrel of oil in drilling and building the derrick and so on to get 100 barrels out. Now the ratio in some places is 3-1. That is, you've got to invest one barrel to get 3 barrels. The EROI numbers tell you that the way our civilization is running is very limited. Our first oil well was in Pennsylvania. It was 1858. I could be wrong by a year or two. It went down 69 feet, 69 and a half feet to hit oil. The Macondo well that blew up in the Gulf started under a mile of water and went down 2 more miles before it got oil. So it gives you some idea of how what we're doing is spending more and more energy, effort, in more dangerous places, in more inaccessible places, to get the last bits of the resources we're using. And that's a limited game.
Yeah.
Well, Mauro, I love having you on, but I know we probably have other people that are trying to call in. So last question for Paul Ehrlich.
Well, I actually don't have a question. I just want to plug what we're doing. We're up here at Mount Shasta, and we're having a big ceremony next to the Crystal Geyser water plant, because we do not want this plant to start up, and we don't want all those plastic bottles in the ocean. So starting at noon to 5 today up here in Mount Shasta City Park, come on over. And thank you very much, Doug. And I actually didn't catch your guest's name, but God bless you for your work.
Paul Ehrlich.
Paul is my name, and thank you for doing what you're doing, because that's
thank
really
you.
Important. Right. I hope Take everybody care. Will come out and help.
All right. Thanks, Mauro.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, coming back to the problem economically, human beings seem to think that they're exceptional, that they don't fall under the rules of nature and Darwin's theories of evolution and, well, we shouldn't really call it theory, proved evolutionary theory and how they're exceptional to these things. And that's why I played that little clip in the beginning, because human beings seem to be the only animal that doesn't recognize there are limits and there are boundaries, and we think we're exceptional. Our economics reflect that. They're based, the whole stock market is based on growth figures and return on investment, but they don't take into account the what you were talking about, the lack of or the less return for the more investment, which, by the way, Joseph Tainer, who wrote The Collapse of Complex Civilizations, basically brings up that's his main point, that civilizations, especially empires, overextend. They get less and less return for their aggression and their investment, and invariably something, not much, a major drought, a 10-year drought in California maybe, makes those civilizations collapse.
So, I mean, we do have a record of collapsing civilizations, and one of the things that scares me and my colleagues is this is the first time we are threatened with a collapse of a global civilization. When the Mayans went down the drain, it didn't affect the people in Nigeria. When the people in the Middle East in the Tigris and Euphrates valleys went down the drain, there were thriving civilizations of Native Americans in North America with cities and everything else. So now, for the first time, we are pushing towards a collapse which will be global. And one of the issues that concerns a lot of scientists is, if that happens, is there any way to make it possible for another civilization to arise? Because the industrial civilization started when we had very huge, abundant, cheap resources that were easily accessible. Now we've used those, so we're not going to leave that if our civilization goes to humanity to build another one. It's scary, but then again, I plan to be dead when it happens.
Well, we have another caller, and I want to take this call. I know he'll have an interesting perspective to add to the show, too. I'm going to take it. Randy, you're on the air.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I have been studying the extinction, the sixth great extinction, now for maybe about 10 years. And the area where I live in Northern California, I was born and raised here, and I've watched the environment be completely decimated in that amount of time, and now the forests are being clear-cut. They're poisoned and scraped clear to bare dirt. And the challenge that I've met with this, it just seems like the public, the masses, don't seem to grasp it or don't seem to care. They don't have time to think about it or to see what's really going on, to acknowledge it. And my question is, do you see it the way I do? The only possible way that we can turn this around is by educating people, and it's such a challenge. It's almost like it's a futile situation. It's rolling so fast and so hard that people are in a daydream. And how do you see the only positive? How do you see the possibility of us stopping this progression of destruction? I'll take it.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I'm sorry.
Randy was going off the air. Just thanking him for his question. Go ahead with your answer.
Oh, I think he's absolutely right. Obviously, that's what you and I are doing right now, trying to educate the public. The book that we're talking about, Annihilation of Nature, is designed to bring to people exactly what's being lost, why it's being lost, what might be done to stop it. It's entirely an educational effort. I should say, give it to all of your friends for a Christmas present. We get no royalties. We've actually put money into it, paying for illustrations, and all the royalties go to educate young conservation biologists and a fund at the Rocky Mountain Biological Lab. So the listener was exactly correct. The only thing I can think of doing is educating people, and every time I listen to one of those presidential debates, I'm reinforced in that feeling. So, get out there, tell your friends, spread the book around. Again, I have no financial interest in it. Actually, it costs me money. So, and of course, listen to this show. And the mass media don't have shows like this.
No, they don't, and because they're obviously not serving humanity. They're serving special interests, unfortunately. And you're right. The reason I even started this show is with the hope that informing people about important things they need to know about instead of infotainment was so much more important, especially at this time in our history. We have another caller, which is interesting because this means a lot of people want to talk to you, Paul. And so I'm going to bring this caller on. Stuart, you're on the air.
Good morning. Stuart, and I'm calling for Dr. Ehrlich, who comes from a long tradition of intellectuals who have talked about this subject. And earlier, Paul Ehrlich has invoked the idea of emergent properties of complex systems. I would like to also mention that another property of complex systems, like our population on this planet, is the idea of feedback and the idea of positive feedback, which the system basically goes unstable and collapses. And I'd like to pose the question, is this objectively a bad thing? So we have these models in biology, like the Lotka-Volterra equations, which describe the relationship between predators and prey, and how when prey decrease in number, predators also decrease in number. And whether or not what we're describing, even though it is horrifying on a certain level, whether it should be necessarily taken as something unnatural or unexpected.
Yeah, excellent question.
Yeah, the trouble with your listeners is they're smart, so they ask tough questions. That really takes you out of the realm of science, in the sense that it's certainly natural. The sorts of things that we're talking about are, for example, if you melt the ice in the Arctic because the planet's getting warmer and the ice is melting, that adds more heat to the planet because the ice used to reflect away energy, and now the ocean, which is exposed, absorbs more. So the hotter you get, the more heating you get. That's a positive feedback, and that could easily lead to the end of civilization. There are many, many non-linearities in the system. That is that when you push on the system threefold, you may first get a threefold response, then a fourfold, then a fivefold, and so on. You don't always have a response that's equal to the pressure. So it's perfectly natural in natural systems for things to go extinct, for systems to collapse, and so on. And so you could say, you know, what the hell? So humanity is one more of many animal species that have undergone huge reductions in numbers or undergone extinction. It's perfectly natural. Why worry about it? The ethical issue is, should we worry about it? Should we care? We are almost certainly the smartest species that ever hit the planet, probably much better than Velociraptor. Is it reasonable and ethical for us to try and save ourselves? My feeling is yes, but it's purely emotional because I have great grandchildren. I have lots of friends with kids and grandkids. and I feel really guilty of passing on a system that could easily lead them down the drain when we have the capability, at least for a while, of avoiding that. Extinction of humanity is going to occur sooner or later. There's no question about that. You got to remember that there are, however, something like 300 sextillion stars in the world. That is 300 followed by 22 zeros. That's more stars than there are grains of sand on Earth's beaches. And there may very well be life elsewhere. And, you know, maybe the life will continue in the universe, just not on in our solar system. So you can make your own moral judgments about that. My judgment is I'd rather try and save it so that people that I know are coming along can have decent lives. But that's not a scientific judgment at all. It's a personal judgment. And I have a long list of people I wouldn't miss a bit.
Stuart, did you have anything to add or another question?
No, I am satisfied. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. Well, yeah, and that brings up maybe what Stuart was trying to get at. And before I ask you this question, I just want to remind our listeners one more time. You're listening to Unspun, an experiment of truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today is Professor Paul Ehrlich, head of the Center for Conservation Biology at Stanford University, author of more than 40 books, including The Population Bomb and his latest, The Annihilation of Nature, Human Extinction of Birds and Mammals. We're discussing the destruction of the biosphere and the future of life on Earth, not only for other species, but for man. I want you to call in if you have questions or comments. The number here is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. So that moral question that you brought up, and I think others would think at this point, many, many people might think that it would be good for civilization to collapse because it might save the biosphere. Imagine if Western culture collapsed, and I can think of many horrific outcomes of that also, not to mention loss of life. But as you say, it's just a matter of time. And maybe the sooner the better.
Well, again, these are tough questions, and you know, you can give your own opinion, but there's no scientific answer to whether it'd be a good thing. For instance, if Homo sapiens disappeared, you know, there are people who would claim, and you can't really contradict them, that we're an enormous threat. We are certainly the threat to most of life on Earth, and that the value of the diversity of life is higher than the value of one invasive species that can't control itself. So, you know, I would like to think that most people would prefer to move in a direction in which we live happily with the diversity of the rest of life, with a sustainable population, a few hundred million people, maybe a billion, the highest estimate I know for a sustainable population with imaginable resources is about 2 billion, and we're now at 7.3. So my own personal feeling is that's the direction I would prefer to go, but I can't say that somebody who says, look, we're a dangerous, destructive species, the world would be better off without us, is wrong or immoral.
No, I'm with you there. It's really a huge question, and of course we all want to see our fellow man and women happy and content and well cared for, but that doesn't look like we're going that way. And so, of course, this is the big problem for humankind. Recently, I read somewhere that we have 4 degrees centigrade already locked in with the greenhouse gases that we are emitting, and that's not even factoring in all the feedback loops from methane and these other things that we know that are one of those triggering mechanisms. Some people say what we're calling long-term, maybe 21st century results of global warming and climate change may come within 10 or 15 years. So what are your thoughts on how dire is climate change, and do you see any ways? I mean, you just let's take climate change and the population problem, two major problems. Do we have a way to fix it?
Yeah, I think we do have a way of giving ourselves a very good chance of fixing it. Of course, they're tightly intertwined. Every person you add to the planet, on average, means more greenhouse gases going into the atmosphere and more climate disruption. And again, when people think about climate disruption, because of the way the media tend to cover it, they're mostly worried about sea level rise. So if you live, I do field work in the Rockies in the summer at 10,000 feet, and I'm not worried about sea level rise out there. Sea level rise can be a huge, huge problem. It could flood the world's major cities. It would affect billions of people because billions of people live close to the coast. But it's not the scale of the threat to agriculture, which is utterly dependent upon the climate, the distribution of fresh water, and so on, and which could affect 5 or 6 billion people or 7 billion people or more, depending on how many we have. So the climate connection to population is dramatic. What should we be doing? Well, if you want to solve the population problem, you got to start. If you want to do it humanely, you should have started 30 or 40 years ago and should start tomorrow. What do you do? Well, the first things you do are give full equal rights and opportunities and job opportunities and pay to women. We know empirically, we know from evidence, that when women have opportunities, jobs, are decently cared for, good health care, and so on, they want to have fewer children, and they do have fewer children. Second thing is to make modern contraception free, essentially free and available to everyone. That's a critical thing. There's disagreement about how many births would be avoided in that case, but it would be many, many. And you should also have in place free, safe, backup abortion, because anti-abortion laws, the position of the Catholic Church on abortion, by the way, Catholics use abortion more than non-Catholics because of the restrictions on the use of good contraception. But what abortion laws do is simply kill women, because women who can't get safe legal abortions simply go have quack abortions, and it often kills them, and it often maims them. It's terrible. So that's where you start. If that doesn't get the birth rate down to the point where we're having a gradual decline in population around the world, then you may have to take other steps like the Chinese did. But the basic thing is the size of a population should be one of the first concerns of the world's government. Hopefully it will become a world issue, and we will be able to solve the migration issues, which already are getting to be horrendous and which we haven't really prepared ourselves for. And, you know, there's a whole set of people who say we ought to keep people out of the United States. Well, you know, that's one point of view. On the other hand, since the United States loots the world of its resources, the riches of the world are flowing towards the United States. Oh, why shouldn't people flow towards the United States, too? It's the people who talk about walls are idiots. The basic issue is one of foreign policy. How do we treat other nations and the people in our nation? And how do we work with the world's governments to see to it that everybody has a chance at a decent life? As long as we are an isolated, relatively isolated island of richness, we're going to have a migration situation on the planet. No question about it. And it's not just going to be the kind of migration that's so featured today, because we are already seeing climate migration, and we're going to see more environmental migration. And they're going to present horrendous problems. There's one thing that we know for sure, and that is the nation-state system that evolved over the last couple of centuries is over. You know, it's not going to work, it's not working, and we need to discuss planetary governance and how we deal with it. It's problems similar to those that faced the founding fathers of the United States when they argued over how to organize and get a decent constitution. We're not even having the discussion. So there's a rave on that question anyway. Happy to go further.
Yeah, and I think that proclamation that the nation state system that we have today, if you can call it that, is in the last throes. We see what happened in Greece, and that's just a poster child for the rest of the Western world. It seems pretty obvious to me. And the use of the word sustainability, I think, is important, because if something isn't sustainable, that means it can't go on.
So That's absolutely right.
But our whole economic system, the whole paradigm, and our founding fathers were not separate from this. They were the beginning of this aggression and takeover of territories and resources from Native Americans, genocide. So we have it in our genes, and so. Unless we can completely change the paradigm in America to one of sustainable existence, let's not go for growth and let's not go for profit. Sustainable existence. And I know you've written some and studied on the human nature. Is human nature really going to allow this to happen? Or we have to be in death throes before we ever get to that point, that utopian ideal that you're talking about?
Oh, again, we don't know the answer for sure. I mean, some people actually talk about have a wonderful oxymoron called sustainable growth. The way we produce our money depends upon the ability to grow continuously, which we can't do. So we're right on the edge, and sustainability really means having a system where people in the future can have the same standard of living or whatever as you have, and we're not thinking in those terms. It's totally exploitative. But, you know, our founding fathers had demographic concerns. They argued, for instance, about how many people in a democracy a single representative could represent. And Madison, if I recall, came up with the number 30,000. He thought that a single representative could live in an area and know enough of the people and know enough about the area to reasonably represent, say, a town of 30,000. The average representative today, I think, is representing something over 800,000, which tells you that as the population grows, democracy shrinks. And we haven't thought about the governance issues, and we're not thinking about them. And yet, obviously, we can't solve problems like climate disruption without some kind of a global system that allows you to control fossil fuels burning. If you want to watch what the chances are of civilization, watch how much fossil fuel, how much carbon dioxide and methane is flowing into the atmosphere. And as long as that keeps increasing, we are, as you indicated, almost certainly going to move past 2 degrees Celsius to 3, 4, 5. We don't know how far. And that is likely to make the planet not able to support anything like our civilization. When people say, well, what difference a few degrees Celsius makes? Well, actually, when it was just a few degrees Celsius colder, there was a mile of ice over New York. The very small changes in the overall energy balance of the planet caused gigantic changes in the climate and, of course, in the weather in lots of sites.
The awareness of the public, of course, is a huge factor. As you said before, that's what you and I are doing here today, trying to educate the public. And I want to invite our listeners, if you're wanting to call in, now is probably your last chance before the end of the show. Paul Ehrlich is my guest, author of The Annihilation of Nature, Human Extinction of Birds and Mammals. This is his latest book out of 40. We're talking about our chances of survival as a human species and what the sixth great extinction means to all of us. And so I invite you to call in 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. Well, we haven't had a lot of happy things to say today. and rightly so. The Romans had the Colosseum and the gladiators and all those things to keep the citizens involved in other things. Nero was playing the fiddle, right? Yeah. And so
and Donald Trump. I mean, when you want info.
Yeah. Go ahead. I can't think of Donald Trump without laughing. I'm sorry.
American Society of Mammalogists just endorsed him for the presidency because they think that thing on his head is a new genus of mammal and they want to be able to scientifically describe it.
Well, you know what happened to the beaver population. So, interestingly enough, we as human beings have some pretty strange ideas about what's important. And I can't blame that on the population. They've been misled. A lot of money has gone into keeping them distracted, so-called reality shows that lack reality, so many things. And I guess my question for you at this point, even though we've thrashed around all over these different points and what our chances are, what can we learn? I mean, we talked about birds, strangely enough, surviving 65 million years ago. They're still around. They're an interesting species. We talk about the canary in the coal mine, but in that same sense, the birds must have had some quality. So what is the quality that in man that might allow us to survive?
Well, we have one quality, which is our most important quality and could help us to survive. I'm very much involved with an organization called The Mob. If you want to know more about it and you want to get involved and it costs nothing, it's mahb.stanford.edu, mahb.stanford.edu. And what we're working on is getting everybody coordinated and looking to the future. We're the only species that has foresight. And we can see what's coming. Not only can we see what's coming, we've seen what's coming. The scientific community has repeatedly warned humanity that we're on a course towards collapse. The World Scientist Statement to Humanity in the 1990s, the population statement of all the world scientific academies a year or so ago, the consensus statement of scientists, all warning us that we've got to do something about the scale of the human enterprise, that we can't continue growing, that we're threatening our life support systems. So we're a species with foresight. And the big issue for particularly social scientists, this academic, is why in hell we aren't using our foresight to then take action that will allow us to avoid the cliff we're coming towards. It's like we're driving past notice after notice, bridges out, stop, don't go, and just adding to the accelerator all the time. And, of course, that's because moneyed interests don't care about the future. And because the population has been kept largely ignorant, we have a broken school system. Our great hope as a species is our ability to have foresight, to look to the future, and then make decisions today that make the future better for future generations. So we've evolved the proper tool, but for reasons that we know in part, but we don't really fully understand, we're not using it.
Yeah, it's disturbing. our greatest strength is not being used properly. And we seem to be going, as you say, rapidly in the wrong direction. I don't know. I think once in a while that maybe the moneyed interest might look a little beyond the next quarterly report. I think that maybe look a little further out there. You might see you need to do something for your own future, let alone the future of humanity.
Well, again, it's part of the faith-based economic system. The famous statement some time ago by the famous Chicago economist who said, the sole responsibility of business is to maximize its profits. That's not true. The responsibility of business has to be to make profits, maybe, but also to make sure that their communities aren't damaged, that their workers are happy and healthy, and so on and so forth. We are much too individualistic in the United States, and of course we're much too communistic in places like China. We've got to find a medium area where everybody will have great concern for not just for their fellow human beings, but for their children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. We got to learn. We can't keep stealing from the future. Again, that's what foresight tells us. It's not a secret. It's well known. A good example is there are no scientists worth talking about who don't understand that you've got to get rid of fossil fuels as the major way, burning them as the major way of getting energy. And yet, we're basically not taking any real steps in that direction. Certainly not fast enough to make a big difference. So we got to use our foresight. We also got to buy copies of The Annihilation of Nature to support conservation biology. It's a wonderful Christmas gift. It's got glorious illustrations.
Yeah, it's a beautiful book. I have it, thanks to your publisher. Anyway, we're down to less than 2 minutes. And so I wanted to thank you not only for your work and your efforts all these many years, over 40 years, you've been ringing the bell and waving the big red flag, and lo and behold, many of the things you warned about are upon us. And so I want to thank you for all that work that you've done and for being on Spun and Experiment in Truth Telling with us today.
It's my great pleasure, and I'm delighted you're doing it. And I hope, like the guy who was on before, you'll get out, people will get out and take action, because one thing that does seem to influence politicians is when people get out and take action.
We know that lesson. They need to be afraid of the people, and I think you're going to see a lot more of that. The younger generation's coming up, and thanks to people like you that have informed all these years. So thank you once again.
My great pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, you've been listening to Unspun, an Experiment in Truth-Telling on KKRN Community Radio. Our guest today has been Paul Ehrlich, head of the Center for Conservation Biology at Stanford University, author of more than 40 books, including Population Bomb and Human Nature, Genes, Cultures, and the Human Prospect. His latest book is The Annihilation of Nature, The Human Extinction of Birds and Mammals. I will put links to his books and other websites that he's mentioned, along with the archives of this show, on kkrn.org. Tune in Saturday morning, 9 a.m., for Unspun and Experiment of Truth-Telling. Next Saturday on Unspun, we'll be talking with Guy McPherson, Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona School of Natural Resources and Environment. We're going to be talking about his favorite subject, abrupt climate change. You need to hear this. So thanks for listening. And now back to our regular programming, Peace Talks Radio up next.